I wish people, yeah, people need to stop sounding smart when talking about Beethoven. I bet they've never even seen any of his paintings.
We start over again. Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody.
Let me know when we're ready to start.
This is our Monday evening Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by John Tytel and David Griggs. Down below, we have David Dorman and John Stalica. And we normally record these around 9 o'clock Eastern. It is Monday, January 9th. It's about 7 o'clock Eastern, Griggs, because there's a big event tonight at 8 o'clock, yeah, correct?
Huge event tonight, 8 o'clock. Hardly any basketball games tonight because East-West University is playing Chicago State. David Dorman on hand in Chicago, but you could not even get to the venue. Like, it's just gridlocked.
It's not safe to leave your house here.
Yeah.
It's within 30 miles of the stadium, you're just staying home. It is right. Great.
Yeah. Is this gonna be another one of those events where Dan Rather gets attacked by spectators?
Probably so. Anyway, we've been tweeting out pictures of what's been happening in Chicago today. It's just off the hook. Be sure and check some of those out. And I've got Phantom Fever. That's the East-West University. They play. Is it in the East Tower? There's an East building and a West building. I don't know where the gym is.
I think their gym is on the second floor of the East building. But okay, this game is at Chicago State, so it's not.
Okay.
But anyhow, let's get into it and. We've got a bunch to get through, a lot that happened, but I figured this, you know, after whatever just happened there, I think it'd be a good idea to start today's show off with one of our favorite features. We haven't done one for a little while here, a little blind resume time.
Oh, wow.
Here.
Oh,
we normally do this before the selection show. Yeah,
I figured blind resume tonight. We can do it anytime we want. And Tytel, you're a committee guessing expert. I got two pretty good resumes up here. My question simply left or right, which one is better right now?
So some of the things that jump out, on the left, you only have a single loss, and it's a tier one loss. On the right, you have three, but they're all in tier one. They both have good tier one as well. The non-conference strengths of schedule seem to be the biggest discrepancy to me. And so if you hate bad schedules, then I would lean towards the team on the right.
But K-State is the right answer, and I'm pretty sure that's the team on the left.
Well,
Greg, you just completely blew it. But look at this. Yeah, well, I might as well reveal it.
I don't know who the other team is, to be fair. But like, yeah,
it's Gonzaga on the right there. It's K-State on the left with those. And the reason I wanted to highlight K-State here and start things off, in fact, in the Big 12 was Dorman. I don't remember any team in recent history having a week, especially in early January, as good as K-State's week was. This team actually set a record. They were unranked last week. They went to 11 in the AP poll this week. No team since the AP poll expanded to 25 had ever made that big of a jump. You go to Texas and win, you go to Baylor and win back-to-back in 1 week. What a week for the Wildcats.
Awesome week for K-State. They were 12-1 coming in. They went on the road, like Chad said, to Texas and Baylor. They dropped 116 points in Austin. Then they went to Waco, Texas, and they beat Baylor in overtime. Incredible week, like you said, Chad. This Marquise Noel is playing awesome. He's been great all year, and now he's even picked it up. He had 36 points against Texas. But the key is, he only had 14 shots from the field. That is incredible. He also went 14 for 14 from the free throw line. If that wasn't good enough, in Waco, he went for 32 points and 14 assists to make sure they sewed up the victory in overtime. He has been sensational. This team is really riding high. They got an incredible, incredible 8 days coming up here. The next 8 days, they have Oklahoma State at home tomorrow. They can win that. Over the weekend, they're going to TCU. That's a huge game for both of them. But a week from tomorrow, the Little Apple, Bramlage Coliseum, the Octagon of Doom will host Kansas. And the Wildcats of K-State will be ready. That place will be rocking. It'll be an incredible game a week from tomorrow night for in-state bragging rights. And Kansas State has the team that can beat them this year.
Yeah, I want to make another point here about K-State. I would argue, and I don't think this team went unnoticed and was just this massive team that somehow everybody missed and then all of a sudden exploded onto the radar. while this team had a bloated record, to Tytel's point, they did it against the 278th strength of schedule. That was terrible.
Eliminate these two games and not much of a profile. It really isn't.
They had to sweat out LSU at home. They had to sweat out Wichita State at home. I mean, those are NIT teams at best. You know, they didn't exactly blow anyone's doors off. They went to Cal, who is terrible, and sweated in that game. So it's not that this was a team that was floating under the radar that had been good all along. This is a team that was average, that now after that went from average to awesome almost overnight. It was almost inexplicable.
Great.
Stalica, let me bring you in here. I pulled up a team on the right here, another conference mate of theirs, TCU. I know they lost the game to Iowa State, but before that, they also picked up a win at Baylor by 1 point. And this is a team that's despite they lost to Iowa State, I think it's still moving in a very good direction.
You may have noticed here, winning at Baylor starting to become a little bit of a pastime right here. And we throw in Marquette later on. Lots of teams are starting to use Baylor as a springboard to a win right here. This is also a Horned Frog team that's won at Utah, and as Tytel will also tell us, they had a few injury issues when they had their stumble against Northwestern State back at the beginning of the year.
Right, but this team, I mean, right now, I think as we record this, TCU fans are a little concentrated in a different sport, maybe,
the game in Chicago's got everyone's attention.
They're waiting for that. Tytel, on the left here, the team that did beat TCU, how about Iowa State?
I mean, the path of TJ Otzelberger, the coach, has been amazing. 2021, he was wrapping up a 12-win season at UNLV. Last year, his first year in Ames, he makes the Sweet 16. Now he's 12-2, undefeated in Big 12 play with wins over Baylor, Oklahoma, TCU. Host Texas Tech this Tuesday, then the toughest stretch of the year at Kansas, then Texas comes to town. A little concerned about the free throw shooting. 68%, not great at all, but they're 4-0 in single-digit games so far. It has not bitten them in the butt yet. And they're getting it done with amazing defense. 10 steals a game, 8 in the nation, 58 points a game allowed, number 9 in the nation.
I will take issue with one thing you said. You talk about this being the toughest stretch. When you look at these schedules for all of these Big 12 teams, I'd argue that the rest of the season is the toughest stretch for all of them. This is just such a loaded conference right now, when the worst team in the conference is probably Texas Tech, who I think is just a team that's not winning, but is a very good team. So look at these standings here. Look at these metrics. You know, everybody top 48 in the nation except for Texas Tech at the net.
Yeah, and when you look at the top, they've got six. Well, they've got five teams in the top 20, and Baylor 21st in the JNG, which is a metric that guesses the committee. That is stupid. I mean, that is just ridiculous how good that is.
Right, and you see, I mean, you see, honestly, you see West Virginia 31. They're off to the 0-3 start in conference. I was not high on this West Virginia team heading in the season. I think that's team maybe going in the wrong direction right now.
Right.
Albeit, you know, their losses were not horrible losses. But
yeah, well, and you would look at their profile and think, well, none of these were bad losses.
Exactly. Well, look at this upcoming schedule here in this conference, and go ahead and tell me, Stalica, what game you're not going to be wanting to watch.
It's going to be whatever game comes up in a few weeks when they get the Big 12 SEC challenge going on, because that's about as close to breathers as the Big 12 is going to get at this point.
And some of them are not getting easy games. Look, these two, just look at Iowa State gets Missouri, TCU gets Mississippi State. Some of them are very tough games at that challenge even.
Yeah. And then I don't know who has Kentucky, but that team doesn't have a tough game.
Well, on that note, why don't we just jump right over to the SEC actually? Because I think we need to talk a little bit about Kentucky here. And Dorman, is it time to start sounding the death knell here for this Kentucky team? I thought for weeks now that the Kentucky fans were going too far by saying it's the end and we need to, you know, all abandon ship. But after this week and the way they looked at Alabama, they may be right.
I was not ready to jump off the ship, but it's getting ugly. Lexington cannot be a happy place. The key here is the next 4 out of 5, I believe, in the SEC are all must wins for Kentucky. I'll take out the Tennessee game in Knoxville. The other four or five, South Carolina, Georgia, A&M, Vandy, Ole Miss. they have to win. They have to get back on the track here and start winning conference games if their resume is going to be tournament worthy come March. But it gets real tough in the SEC. This is their chance to get wins in the SEC and make their metrics look good. So it better happen in the next 3 weeks.
But they don't have the marquee wins yet. If they just win those garbage games, I don't think that's enough. They're going to have to do something like win out of Tennessee or win a game in Arkansas or win, you know, I don't even know what else to say. Win the Kansas game. I don't know.
Go to the SEC finals. Yes, they're going to have to pull something besides the winnable games. They're going to have to pull a big one to make the resume to get a tier one win. Look at it. It's empty.
Yeah, and I want Ty Tell to comment on this. He's our selection committee guessing expert. When you look at this resume and you look at their opportunities and you count up the number of wins against teams that are likely going to the NIT, not even the NCAA, I see one. Maybe two. LSU is probably an NIT team. Is this a problem?
A little bit, but as Chad loves to point out, there's different metrics and different colors, and the ones in green say they got a whole bunch of good stuff coming their way, both on the court for themselves as well as for the schedule, which is going to give them plenty of chances to get back into Tier 1.
Well, one of those upcoming games, Tytel, is Texas A&M, and I think you had a few thoughts on this team today, huh?
I mean, Uncle Buzz, like, I was ready to give up on him after the home loss to Wofford in his last game before Christmas, but they've won 4 in a row, 2-0 to start conference play, beating Florida and LSU last week. They host Missouri Wednesday, then a road cupcake at South Carolina on Saturday. And some teams live and die by the three. This team lives by getting to the free throw line. They're number one in the nation, 19 free throws made per game. My question, if Jimbo Fisher makes $9 million this year for going 5-7, then how much money should Buzz get for starting 10-5?
50.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
It depends on whether or not he can lose 8 in a row again like last year.
Yeah. The whole state of Kentucky is an unhappy place right now. Louisville, not happy. Western, not happy. Murray, probably not happy. It's just a very sad state.
Griggs, what about this team over here on the left? We talked about this a little before we started the show here. The Georgia Bulldogs are now 11-4, but it's kind of a fake 11-4, in my opinion.
Yeah, the home win against Auburn, and I don't think Auburn's done much on the road, so, I mean, how much credit do you really give them for that, is the best thing that they've done. And outside of that, they've beaten the sub-NIT teams. They've beaten the teams that they're supposed to beat. I'm not that enamored with them. I just don't think that they're a doormat.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
Well, I mean, they are sitting here. If you look at the standings, 11-4, sixth place, 1-1 in conference.
Yeah.
What about the top of this conference? We've got Alabama and Tennessee up top there.
Woo-hoo! I love it. I love Alabama. I love I love this conference, and I'm not even an SEC guy. But beyond Alabama and Tennessee, Auburn is really, really good. I think they'll be fine. There were some worries early. I think Arkansas is going to be fine. I think, you know, if they can get healthy and come back, Arkansas is as good as any. I'll take them over any other conference in sixth place right now. This SEC is deep and loaded.
Yeah, I mean, Griggs, you're going to point out that these teams need road wins, but it's still early in the season. Come on.
It is, but they'll get them eventually. Like, Arkansas is going to Vanderbilt. If they lose that one, then I'll start, they got Vandy, they got South Carolina, they do need road wins. I don't think that they'll be unable to get them. It's just that they don't have them yet. Another point I wanted to make about Tennessee, they have two losses, and one of them, I don't want to say that you throw it out and give them a mulligan, but I will say that how they played against Colorado the second or third game of the year is not indicative of how they're playing now or how they will probably be playing in March. They're as good as anybody. They're probably not going to be all the way up on the one line, because you do factor in every game, and losing a homish game to a non-NCAA tournament team, sometimes that in and of itself can get you knocked off the one. But Tennessee can beat one seeds.
They're number two in the net right now. I think this team is definitely on pace for a one seed.
You think so? I'm sorry, Chad. I know you did a bracket. Where did you have them today?
I had them on the three line because
okay,
because
yeah.
I got ripped apart for that. I did penalize him a bit too much, I think, for the Colorado loss and a lack of road wins, you know, kind of a Griggs thing here, but
yeah,
but I probably did have them aligned too low. So I'll confess.
But they're good. And Kansas, very good. And they beat them. Tennessee and Alabama. I mean, Alabama won at Houston. That might be the best singular win that any team manages all season long. Okay, so
we'll debate that in just a moment here. I do want to take a look at the upcoming schedule in the SEC before we get there, including the Georgia TCU game tonight in a different sport. Who have we got to recently? Salika, you know, we've got the big Kentucky Tennessee game on Saturday. I mean, and as well as Missouri with a road game here. What else are you looking at?
Oh, I would say that's probably the last chance for Kentucky just to get their momentum started right here. If you look at Tennessee, you're going to have a week of rivalries because you also have Vandy coming into Knoxville Tuesday. And then you have to look at Mississippi State, for example. They have a chance to potentially get some wins at Georgia and Auburn. Otherwise, their profile is going to start smelling a little fraudulent.
Yeah, Mississippi State's got to get some wins. LSU, another team, huge week for them, hosting Florida, then at Alabama. At Arkansas before that, too, yeah.
Alabama, Arkansas, Wednesday night. Two Final Four talent teams that could really be good.
The LSU-Florida game is only huge if LSU loses it. Because if you lose to Florida at home, you should get flushed.
One last thing before we move on from this conference. Some talk over the last few days here that Texas from the Big 12 is interested in Calipari as their head coach. Now, I haven't heard anything yet that Calipari is interested in there, but, you know, Calipari got a lifetime contract for Kentucky. Tatella, you think he could, might break that contract, especially with the way the fans are treating him right now?
I mean, if somebody's willing to put another zero in the end of your contract, I guess you consider it, but I draw the analogy to Lincoln Riley. I know it's a different sport, but he was doing just fine at Oklahoma with these great recruiting classes and Heisman winners and bowl games and everything. And then he took a ton of money to go to USC and had a very good season and is not in the college football playoff and is not playing in tonight's national championship game. So be careful what you wish for.
Right, right. And Kentucky does already have the number one recruiting class for next year. So that's a lot to give up to walk away from the school.
Reminder that Chris Mack is available for Kentucky should that happen.
What about Tim Kloos? Out of retirement, Tim Kloos to Kentucky.
Yeah, he retired for health reasons, so we like Tim Kloos.
But we love Tim Kloos.
Griggs,
that would make me so happy.
Griggs, you just told us that Alabama's win at Houston was the best road win by any team all season.
Yeah.
What about Rutgers last week winning at Purdue?
It's definitely in the conversation. It's 1B. I think it's Purdue's only loss. I honestly, on paper, that one might actually be a little better because Purdue's profile is probably going to top out a little higher than Houston simply because of the opportunities that they have in the Big Ten that Houston does not have in the American. But it's a damn good one. I mean, it's enough to where if Rutgers simply holds serve the rest of the way, it's going to get them in. It is harder to win at Purdue and like winning at Houston than it is to win a game in the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, look at this Purdue, very, very impressive profile now with just the one home loss to Rutgers. Scarlet Knights followed with a dominating win, Salika, over Maryland. Then give some back as they really just failed to show up against Iowa on Sunday.
I think Iowa's the only team that doesn't get distracted by Trollolo during the pregame warmups over at Rutgers.
Yeah, and speaking Iowa. About Iowa here, I mean, this is Tytel. I know this is one team you want to speak about, but I got to ask you about this profile. It's a very strange profile when you factor in one of the worst losses we'll ever see, but then they bounce back this week, beat Indiana, and may be the only team to win at Rutgers all season. Well, Seton Hall did, so second team to win at Rutgers all season.
Yes. So most of the resumes are self-explanatory. Like the good teams win the tier one games and the bad teams lose the tier four games. But as you said, this one is all over the place. The Eastern Illinois game, it's hard to explain it away, but it is because they had two guys missing, one of the McCaffreys and Chris Murray. When healthy, they are capable of beating on these tier one teams. It's not a fluke. The tier four loss is a fluke. the X factor is that the other McCaffrey, Patrick, I believe Connor was out for the Eastern Illinois game. Patrick just stepped away from the program for mental health reasons. So I don't know if he's gone for a week or the season. I certainly wish him well, but they seem like they're still hanging around. If you can go into Jersey Chad's Arena and win, you're doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah. But Patrick was not there for the huge comeback against Indiana this week. And then for the Rutgers win also. So
I don't know how the committee will evaluate this. Maybe Tytel knows. I know he studies it, but there was about a 10-day period where Iowa was just not, something was noticeably off. Like there was some problem, some issue. And if you wipe out that 3-game stretch, the profile doesn't look totally as schizophrenic and as haphazard as what it is. The Eastern Illinois loss is so bad that if you were to do a data dive back to the 1980s, you might find one team that got selected and was inside the bubble with a loss that bad. Now, I'm not saying that's a disqualifier, but I am saying it is a very, very bad loss.
Tulsa got an at-large bid a few years ago with a non-D1 loss on their profile.
Okay, football, so it does happen. It's not a disqualifier. Happen. But when you look at the win at Rutgers, that's a phenomenal win. Like most bubble teams aren't going to have a win anywhere near that good.
And I'll qualify by saying that Tulsa team absolutely did not deserve a bid that year, but they got one.
They did not, yeah.
Tytel, let me go back to you because you know you want to talk about the Spartans who I've got on the right there as well.
They lost back-to-back games in late November, early December. They've won 6 in a row, 6-point win over the arch rival Wolverines last Saturday. Tough road trip this week at Wisconsin Tuesday, at Illinois Friday. Mm. The key has been the return, speaking of injuries, senior forward Malik Hall. Missed 8 games this year with a stress injury in his right foot. When he's hurt, the team's 5-3. He's played 7 games when healthy. When he's healthy, they're 6-1. They only lost 1 point to Gonzaga on a battleship. There's only 2 coaches who have made 24 straight NCAA tournaments, some guy named Krzyzewski and some guy named Izzo. We could be a few months away from Tom Izzo becoming the first coach to ever make 25 straight NCAA tourneys. Wow.
Wow. Wow, indeed.
That is – I did not know
incredible.
That.
Incredible.
Dorm written. How about the Northwestern Wildcats, another red-hot team here?
Incredible. I couldn't find anyone before the season started that even was giving Northwestern accolades of the middle of the Big Ten. Everyone said bottom, not going to be good, even the most optimistic. They lost kids to North Carolina and Duke. Ryan Young went to Duke. Peter Nance went to North Carolina. They're playing big minutes for these teams. These were big losses for Northwestern. Everyone said it was bad season coming. I was with them. But they've started off the Big Ten at 3-1. We all love the Big Ten. This is not some hoax. They won in Michigan State. They won in Bloomington, Indiana yesterday. And they beat Illinois at home. Those are 3 teams that I agree are going to the tournament come March. They lost to Auburn by 1. They had a chance to win that game. I'm very high on Auburn. This Northwestern team is for real. And if they can stick around 500 in the Big Ten, they're going to the tournament.
I agree with you completely. And Salika, I think we got to talk about a team heading in the opposite direction of Northwestern. What about the Hoosiers?
This is a team that probably stole whatever stink bag Iowa was holding. Let's not forget the Hoosiers had a 21-point lead early in that game in Iowa City. And this is also a team that's been battling injuries with Xavier Johnson and now Race Thompson. Suddenly you're looking at a team that's not only lost at Iowa, they had their first home loss against the aforementioned Northwestern Wildcats. And it's not going to get much easier with a trip to Penn State and a home game against Wisconsin looming right here. Oh yeah, and Illinois and Michigan State also looming. So a bit of a tough stretch for the Hoosiers right here.
Because somebody to the Big 12, look at the rest, throw away the Minnesota game, and it's a tough rest of the way here.
Yeah, it is. And when I look at this current resume as it sits, my first, that win at Xavier was legit good. Xavier is really good. And I think Xavier is substantially better now than they were in the first couple weeks of the season when this game was played. I don't think Indiana would win it now. But when you look at Indiana's profile,
well, that was also a healthy Indiana team.
Yep. Yeah. The thing that jumps to mind is, man, this team is great when they're playing bad under the radar teams.
Here's the rest of the standings here. Purdue did bounce back from the Rutgers loss, won at Ohio State in real nice win, and then beat Penn State Sunday. the rest of the teams there as well. Upcoming schedule here. A lot to look forward to this week here this conference. From Michigan State at Wisconsin to Illinois at a somewhat live Nebraska team this year, even. And I think we can pretty much circle every game on this schedule here as one worth watching. I don't know if there's any that you can skip here. Maybe.
I think the Northwestern Rutgers game on Wednesday, the stakes are really high in that one because it's two teams that I think are capable of improving their profiles between now and the end. And when you get two teams like that that are playing each other, it's always fun.
You mentioned Xavier. Why don't we just jump over to the Big East next year? And Stalica, your Xavier team came up with another win at Villanova on Saturday. Never an easy place for them to win.
That's one of those victories that's more of a name win right there. As a puppet would say, we are talking about beating an NIT team on the road. But if you're a Xavier fan, let's face it, it took nine tries, but they finally get the win in Philadelphia. Granted, this is a Villanova team that's not only been shorthanded with Justin Moore still recovering from an Achilles, they're missing Longino after the Georgetown win. So Villanova, not going to be at full strength for the foreseeable future, but it was also a breakout game for Cam Whitmore, who I think went off for 25 points. Unfortunately for Villanova, that was also the game where Zach Freemantle went off for 29, and he becomes the player of the week in the Big East.
Mm-hmm. And Dorman, I think the story this week, though, is this Providence team, who I'm starting to become a believer in, very much so with their win over UConn.
If Kansas State wasn't going to be my team of the week, it would have been Providence. Those are some incredible wins. This team is for real. Coach is doing what he does best. He takes 2- and 3-star players and he makes them into studs, and they just play together as a team and they work their butts off on defense. I love the heart and the soul of this team. They play off Cooley's energy. They got Creighton on the road and Marquette on the road coming up. Two rough road games, then come home for DePaul and Butler. But if Providence can play like this, they're one of my top teams in the Big East.
Yeah, this next stretch, when you look at this, 4 of 6 on the road, and three of those road games, wow. If they win one or two, like if they can win 2 of those 4 road games, I'd say that's a pretty that's an outstanding showing.
Yeah,
I tell one of the upcoming games is at Marquette, a Marquette team that seems to be part of the theme for tonight. They also beat Baylor this season.
I want you to look at those losses because we got 4 losses, which is not great, but they're all the power conference teams. They're all by 5 or less. 2 of them were in overtime. They are close to being like right up there. The offense has been unstoppable because 2 reasons. Number one, they pass the ball very well. 19 assists per game is number 9 in the nation. And then they put it in the basket. 50% shooting, number 7 in the nation. And junior point guard Tyler Kolick, he's been near perfect during his 4-game winning streak. 39 assists, 10 steals, and only 3 turnovers. Huge stretch ahead, 3 games in 8 days starting Wednesday. Host UConn, go to Xavier, host Providence.
Yeah, big stretch here. And Griggs, I pulled up on the left here, Creighton's profile. Because again, we go back to these metrics. Look at these predictive metrics. This is a top 20 team. Yeah. It should be in contention for a protected seat if you go by metrics alone. I didn't have this in my field this morning.
Yeah, well, Creighton, like they started off 6-0 and got ranked, was it 8th, 9th? I mean, they were way up there. And then they lost 6 in a row. And some of them, they were really competitive at Texas. But, like, they were losing games. BYU, Arizona State, just games that you would expect them to win. Nebraska at home was the one that just really sort of the anvil that broke the camel's back, I guess. Not the straw. Like, Nebraska at home is just not a good loss. But since then they've won 3 of their last 4, and maybe they just go through phases where they're good for 6 games and then bad for 6 games.
I don't know. I mean, you look at something. One of the metrics that we like to talk about sometimes is KenPom's luck metric, and that is basically your actual record compared to where you should be. One of the worst teams in the nation. That does tell me that you think they're gonna really turn things around here, though.
Yeah, I love the luck metric. It isn't. We kid Ken Pomeroy, but like, if your record does not match where he has you ranked, he just comes with a metric that says you're unlucky.
I think Creighton's actually better than they've shown in the last month or so. I know they had a rough stretch. I think they're going to get healthy, and I think this team will be in the tournament come March. I agree with you, Chad, not keeping them in, not having them in today, and that's where I got them. I think Coach McDermott will right the ship, and Creighton will be in the tournament.
A big week for them at Xavier at home against Providence. Other games of note, UConn at Marquette Wednesday, Marquette Xavier Sunday. So it was a couple of really good games here this week. And a good old classic Big East rivalry Monday night here. Big Monday, Georgetown-Villanova next Monday night.
I don't know who's had a tougher week in Washington. Is that going to be Georgetown or Kevin McCarr? No, let's not get into that.
No.
Let's go ACC. How about that? Where Tytel, first place, undefeated in conference, 5-0, the Clemson Tigers.
So a little bad news to start is that their three losses are to teams who didn't make the field in my Sunday bracket, South Carolina, Iowa, and Loyola Chicago.
Yeah.
Good news, 5-0 in the ACC after a pair of one-possession road wins last week at Vatek and at Pitt. Home cupcake in Louisville on Wednesday. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Be
favored when Duke comes to town on Saturday.
Yes.
Coach Brad Brownell, he's only won more than 20 games once in the past 9 years. Looks like he might do it this year. And a fun fact, Dabo Swinney finished the Clemson football season 11-3 last week. Brownell is 13-3.
This Clemson team really needs Loyola Chicago and South Carolina to play well the rest of the season. If we get those losses into tier three, profile looks a lot better. Tier four is painful.
Yeah, it does. It's also true that the chances of that happening are small. That they're
South Carolina loss is just barely tier four at the moment.
Yeah. The other thing, Clemson is another team, and Pitt is, I would put them in this category as well. Not to the degree that Kansas State has improved, but if you watch them now, as opposed to just watching them 3 or 4 weeks ago, they are a lot better. They switch better on defense. They make better. They're just a better basketball team. And that winning big games, as opposed to losing to borderline tier four teams like they were doing back in November and December. And you credit that to the coaching staff. This team is better than they were at the start of the year.
Go ahead, Dorman, first, and then I have a question for you after your comment.
And I don't think the ACC is that strong, where Clemson should have no problem with Louisville, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Boston College, Louisville again. They're going to pick up enough wins. I think Clemson's going to be in the tournament.
Yeah. What's your question, Ken?
Well, my question to Dorman was, you talked about the team of the week. You know, I got another team up here that may have been the team of the week, at least, and it would be in the ACC. On the right there, NC State, Duke, and Vatek on the road.
Awesome week for the Wolfpack. I'm really starting to think this team is coming on. I love Kevin Keats at Wilmington. I really like him. I think he has his team and the program headed in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Again, like I said for Clemson, there's a lot of bad ACC teams. Georgia Tech on there, Notre Dame, Florida State. It's the same teams, obviously. They have enough chances, NC State, to pick up wins, win these games at home. They're good enough to beat Duke again in Duke. Like this, that was no fluke last week. They ran them off the court because they're a better team and they're a better coach team as of right now. And same thing with North Carolina. I really believe that. NC State had a great week, and I don't think it's a fluke.
Well, this is not a Coach K Duke team.
No.
He's not the head coach. And Salika, I think we've seen that in this team. Duke goes to NC State this week and gets blown out. They already have an 11-point loss at Wake, and they almost probably should have lost at Boston College.
Yes.
This is a team that seems to live and die by a Coach K's scheduling philosophy of emphasizing more neutral games and not enough road games right here. When Boston College is your only true road victory, I mean, it's conceivable that Clemson, Virginia Tech could easily be losses, Georgia Tech might not be a gimme for the Blue Devils. And if they lose that one, then you got to start thinking maybe first ballot, maybe bubble. They better hold serve at home against Pitt and the Canes. I'll say that much at least.
Completely agree.
The rest of the conference here, Miami.
I love this Miami team. I know they lost this week, but I think they can win the conference.
Tytel, where do you have Miami right now? What type of seed are they?
I think I had him at the four. Let me triple check. Yeah, I had him as a four, but then I also had Duke at the four. So obviously two teams going in very different directions.
Okay. Yeah, and that was even with the loss at Georgia Tech.
I believe so.
Week, about a week ago, yeah. Okay.
Well, Miami got no respect in the preseason. It took them forever to get into the rankings. This is a team that was in the Elite Eight last year and returned everybody. Like, of course they're good.
Some very interesting games actually coming up this week, including tomorrow night, North Carolina at Virginia. I think you got to circle that one.
Yeah.
I think you got to surprisingly circle Pitt at Duke on Wednesday, the way this Pitt team is playing. Yeah. And then Miami, yeah, NC State on Saturday.
That's a fun. Oh, that, I'm looking forward to that one. Yeah.
That'll be great. And North Carolina, a quick point on North Carolina. I look back at this point last year, I didn't have North Carolina in the field. We all know they went on a huge run in the ACC all the way to the NCAA tournament finals. This team has all the talent in the world. North Carolina could get very hot, make a tournament run just like they did last year.
Yeah. Yeah, last year they didn't have a win against the tournament team until I think it was March 9th when they won at Duke. They went on to win against several tournament teams after that.
I know there's two people in the show that don't want me to go to this conference at all, I think.
Today. No. Skip. But
the Pac-12, Arizona with a thrilling 3-point win at home over Washington, and then came the home game against Wazoo. Dorman Titelli, the one of you wants to take this, you know, what happened to your team?
Take it.
I'll go. I thought they came out with zero intensity. There was no energy. The kids aren't back in school, so I know the fans weren't as loud as normal, but that was no excuse. Washington stayed at home. Coach Tommy Lloyd had yet to lose at home in the McHale Center. He did so on against Saturday on Washington State. Washington State played really well. I'm not against Washington State. They played a nice game. They hit some big shots when Arizona was starting to make some runs, but Wazoo was the better team on Saturday. Arizona played with zero intensity or emotion. I just thought they lacked everything. They couldn't hit a shot every time they would try to get back in it, and they took the loss. And they didn't look good on Thursday night against Washington. Washington could have beaten them, but they couldn't hit a shot down they couldn't hit a three in the last 3 or 4 minutes, so they would have had them too.
And is this just sort of a bad, like, is this a bit of an anomaly? Everybody kind of goes through peaks and valleys. Maybe this is just Arizona's valley. They're still phenomenally good.
A team that I don't think really has hit a valley this season, Titel, is UCLA. Close game, good game, but they did beat USC on Thursday.
So as somebody who's been to a bunch of Georgetown games over the past couple of years, like, part of me feels like I might be the jinx. I'm not sure. But you look at it, like, the Bruins, I have statistical evidence to back up this one. So I went to see them play Illinois and Baylor in Vegas in November, and they lost them both. When I don't go and I'm not in attendance, they're 14-0 this year. So you tell me. Incredible 2-point win over arch rival USC last Thursday. They blew an 18-point second-half lead and still was able to get it done in the end. 11-game winning streak is the fourth longest active streak in the nation. They host Utah and Colorado this week, and then they get a road trip to Arizona schools next week.
You know, we're going to be talking about the top two winning streaks of the nation here coming up in a few minutes. We'll get back to that. Yeah. But before we leave this conference, Delika, quick.
Oh, okay. I want you to pull a profile before we leave.
Go ahead.
Okay. Can you pull up Wazoo?
Okay.
And I'm going somewhere with this because
where
they're well,
7-10.
They're easy to write off because that
360,
is obviously
362
not,
luck. They're even worse.
Okay, I'm going to their losses. A 1-point loss to UCLA right in there against Utah State on a neutral floor. They were in there against Baylor. They went to Arizona State, competed. You know, a home loss by 2 to Utah. Is this team deceivingly dangerous because they're good enough to beat you, and if they do, they're going to wreck your profile into a mountain,
and they're bad enough to lose at Prairie View. I get it. Yes, they're a dangerous team.
How do you evaluate a loss to Wazoo? Maybe the committee looks at it and says, you know, it's not as bad as it looks.
Well, if there's still 69 in the net, that's not. It's going to show up in a decent spot in the team sheet. So I don't know what you're complaining about.
I'm not complaining. I'm pointing it out that they're deceived.
And it could look even worse if the Cal Bears end up winning at Wazoo.
They've lost a lot of close games. I'm doing this for the people.
Salika, the Cal Bears beat Stanford this week. Wow, this seems certainly wrong. But Utah beats Oregon State, then gets Oregon at home. Oregon coming off getting crushed by Colorado, and they blow the game. Not what Utah needs to do if they want to make the tournament, is it?
I think that said more about Oregon finally showing a bit of a pulse. Might be too little, too late for the Ducks right here. When we're talking about Utah, that's not the kind of loss you want to be taking on when your profile is pretty bubble-ish itself.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing. Utah, big week at UCLA and at USC this week.
Yes,
the Arizona teams to totally redeem themselves.
Absolutely, and the Arizona teams are in Oregon this week, so we'll
they
see
get
what happens.
One of those, that's a good trip. Like, I mean, if they get it at UCLA, it's amazing. But just winning at USC would be big.
Griggs, a team that struggled. We actually showed this profile at the top of the show. Gonzaga did go 2-0 this week, but it was not easy.
Not easy at all. Going to the Bay Area, playing San Francisco, Santa Clara, trailing for what? I mean, if it wasn't 39 and a half minutes, it was close. They were behind the whole game. And literally, I think one of their first and only leads occurred with less than 3 seconds to go on the final possession. But you figured, okay, they sleepwalked. Then they went to Santa Clara and really had to sweat there. And yeah, is it alarming, or is it just one of those things that it's tough to win on the road when you're everyone's showcase home game? Santa Clara in particular had a lot to play for, because if they did get that win, does it kind of start inching them with up to the bubble and put it within reach? Santa Clara has played some really good ball this year. Or is Gonzaga a little bit of a mirage in this particular year based on, like, where they are in the rankings versus how good they actually are?
Okay.
If you want me to answer that, I'm not sure. I was kind of just that was a rhetorical question.
I was just going to say that, you know, BYU is a team that had a bad loss this week, losing the game to Loyola Marymount. They really couldn't afford that one. St. Mary's did exactly what they're supposed to be doing. But Tytel, I was going to ask you, you want to talk about Pacific, correct?
I almost made Coach Leonard Perry my final thought, but since we have some West Coast time and we can't talk about Gonzaga every week, if you need somebody to pull for this year, so this is a guy, he had five straight losing seasons at Idaho from 02 to 06, then spent 15 years as an assistant in college and a scout in the NBA. First year at Pacific last year, 8-22. This year, 6-point home loss to Cal State East Bay on December 11th, and his team was 4-8. I was worried they were going to fire him. He's won 6 of 7. He's 10-9 overall. He gets the week off to prepare for Santa Clara on Saturday. To give you an idea of how long it's been since he had 2 rebounds in his only NCAA tournament as a player for Idaho in 1990, his head coach that year, a 30-year-old guy named Kermit Davis, who's still going strong 33 years later at Mississippi, at Ole Miss.
Wow.
Man, that was a deep dive.
A couple more conferences real quick here. Houston Dorman had a very good week. They just rolled their 2 games.
They're doing everything I thought they would in the American. I think this conference is all theirs. I know it's crazy. I don't think they take a loss in the conference, maybe in the tournament if someone catches them on a weeknight. Houston is so much better than even Memphis. And I like Tulane coming in the preseason. Central Florida has shown some life. I do. No doubt about it. There's some good teams. I was just talking about Houston is so much stronger than these teams. I don't see any issue with Houston rolling over everybody.
I love to add to Dorman's point right here. Mark Adams during the Houston-Cincinnati game, for example, like to talk about teams having a hangover by playing Houston. It's not just playing the Cougars themselves, but when you look at what happens the following game, look at Virginia losing at Miami. And if you're Cincinnati, you're playing East Carolina the next game, look out.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, we could talk about Houston for an hour, but
let's talk about somebody else, the American. Let's talk about UCF, though, Griggs, on the right there.
All right.
Because you said you like them, so.
I do, and yeah, you're holding your nose over that loss to UNC Asheville. You really wish that ball and chain wasn't weighing them down or anchoring them down. But, and they've also – it's one of those teams to where I think that their profile is not a reflection of how good they actually are. They went into Houston, were very competitive. Missouri, also a team that most of you have in the top half of your bracket, lost by only two, and lost by two to a Miami team, albeit at home, that we agree is a protected seed. The problem is there enough good on there to get them inside the bubble? And if not, do they have that opportunity to put it there?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's these next 2 weeks, Memphis at Tulane, at South Florida, Houston. Memphis and Houston both come up at home. Huge, huge two weeks coming up here.
I don't think, even at home, I don't think they can get Houston.
But you got to win that Memphis game.
Yeah, you got to win the Memphis game. I think they will win the Memphis game. I like Memphis too. Maybe not as much as I did a week ago, but like, I like UCF more. I think this is a good UCF team, and I hate to build praise for a team based on games they almost won, but holy crap, look at some of those games they almost won.
Washington State statement earlier, you do like teams that lose close games. So.
I was making a point that Washington State is hard to beat.
So is UCF.
To Griggs's point, and I agree that without the Houston win, you almost better beat Memphis twice. You know, you really cannot, if you're not going to beat Houston at all, you cannot slip up many times and still hope to have an at-large bid.
Tytel, heading into the season, we were pretty high on this Tulane team. It's been a little disappointing, though, from them, hasn't it?
I don't know who this we is, Chad, but yes, it's been a roller coaster of a season. Started 3-0, lost 5 of 9, won 3 in a row in January. Winnable game at SMU Wednesday, tough homestand with UCF and Houston after that. Good news, free throw shooting has been unbelievable. 81%, number 3 in the nation. The better news, the future is bright. Forget about this year. Coach Ron Hunter, guess how many seniors he has on his 15-man roster? 0.
Yeah.
But we got to remember what day and age we're in. He's also got to keep those kids out of the transfer portal.
Yep.
But upcoming schedule here in the conference, Houston is going to be hosting South Florida, and I think that's their only game I see on there. I think it is. UCF at Tulane, we mentioned that earlier. One more conference real quick here, the Mountain West. Griggs, we got San Diego State in the rankings. They went at Wyoming this week. I think this team is really starting to look like the best team in this conference, despite the fact they were down in the standings to start the season.
And at no point really did they ever not look like the best team in the conference. I agree with you on that. I think that the ranking is warranted and valid, and they've certainly done enough to deserve it. This league is interesting because when you look at Nevada and Utah State and Boise State, New Mexico, and San Jose to a degree, in Nevada, you have about 5 or 6 teams with bloated records, but it's empty calories all across the board. And you got to figure, like, of those 6, are 2 or 3 going to emerge? Like, are there enough quality wins to be had in this league among each other that pushes 2 or 3 teams inside the bubble? I don't think New Mexico was as good as their ranking. And I think they can get in there maybe, but there's 2 or 3 teams that I like more than them.
Yeah, New Mexico with 2 losses going from undefeated to not even in my field this morning. Dorman, I think you like the San Diego State team also, though, right?
Exactly what you two guys said. I think they're finding their stride. The losses, there's nothing to worry about there. I think San Diego State is about to show you why everyone liked this team coming into the preseason of the conference. This week, they get the undefeated Nevada Wolfpack. So we'll see a showdown there, and they got New Mexico. So if those teams have any hopes of these at-large berths or hoping to, get a better spot on their resume here, Nevada and New Mexico have huge weeks, but San Diego State is looking all the part. I like this Aztec team.
Yeah, Nevada, again, a lot of empty calories, although the win at San Jose State is something.
Okay.
But UNLV, lots of wins, but empty calories. Like, you know.
I'd argue the same with Utah State as well. Yeah. They've got a very high net, but they don't have the wins. But Tytel, what about Boise State? Are we overlooking the Broncos?
A little. They finished December with back-to-back road losses, so certainly can be overlooked for that. But started January with back-to-back home wins over San Jose State and Utah State. Tough road game at 12-3 UNLV coming up on Wednesday. And a quick shout out to point guard Marcus Shaver from the great city of Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes.
He had 2 good years in Portland, then got an injury in his first year in Boise. He's now on pace to have his 5th season of 10 or more points a game. If he maintains his current scoring average of 15 a game, he might crack the 2,000-point barrier during the conference tournament.
There you go.
It's clutch down the stretch. I agree with Tytel. That kid is money when it comes to big games.
Interesting non-conference game tonight. By the time most people watch this game, it will be final already. Oral Roberts at New Mexico. This is one of New Mexico's makeup games because of the New Mexico State series being canceled. Stalika, obviously, the other key games I think we already mentioned is tomorrow night, Nevada at San Diego State.
That's going to be the key game right there. And if you're watching Fresno State and San Jose State, I strongly advise not operating heavy machinery. We're talking about a top 25 slowest pace in the country game right there. But fortunately, we'll have Boise State and UNLV to redeem ourselves a little bit. And then there's the little New Mexico-San Diego State game on Saturday.
Don't forget tomorrow. Absolutely. Air Force Colorado State. It's a little front rage action. We got one more team to discuss. It's over in the Colonial. They are still they're now the top 25 in both polls. College of Charleston, 16-1 overall. This team, let me just go ahead and pull up their team sheet here. This team just keeps winning games. They haven't done much. They don't have much other than the Vatek win, really at top of profile, nothing really on the road, but that might all change this week. I mentioned the 2 longest winning streaks are going head to head. That is coming up here this week on Wednesday night when they are at UNC Wilmington. Charleston, the longest win streak of the nation, Wilmington, the 2nd longest heading into this game. Dorman.
I can't remember the last time we had that, but I'm really excited. I think Charleston's the better team, but that probably gets negated because they're going on the road to Wilmington. I expect the place to be absolutely jumping, excited, loud. This is going to be a great test for the Cougars of Charleston. This is going to show me a lot this game. I want to see if Wilmington's up to the task and they can beat a real good, solid team that's going to be in the tournament. Or is Charleston that much better and they're going to run this Colonial Conference?
Yeah, I think they'll deservedly be a top 25 team with this win. I'm still a little iffy whether they really belong up there. I like Florida Atlantic better than them still, and that's another under the radar program.
If they win out aside from that, because I think this is their hardest remaining game, and that includes the conference tournament, because the conference tournament's not a true road atmosphere. If they drop this win out and don't win the conference tournament, I think that's enough. I realize there's a lot of moving parts, and I'll defer to Tytel, but I think the committee will select them.
I do. What I thought you were going to go is if they lose at Wilmington and then win out and win the tournament at like 30, finishing 31-2, is this a protected seed team or not?
Doubtful.
Let me throw another one. What if they flat out win out? They win this week and they win every game until the tournament. You got one loss. Don't you belong on the 4 line?
Right.
It's an interesting question. I'm kind of surprised. Well, do you belong there, or will the committee put them there? How many losses did Murray State have? 1 or 2 losses last year? And while they were in on the first ballot and in the top half of the bracket, they were nowhere near a protected seed.
They'll have no tier one wins, correct?
Yeah. What was the year?
The win at Wilmington could end up, if they win at Wilmington, that might be a tier one win at the end of the day if Wilmington gets top 75.
Yeah. We've seen this before. Like, where was George Washington the year they just blew everyone off? That was 15 years ago.
An 8 seed that year. About 06.
Yeah. And I think that profile was comparable to this, maybe even a little better. And did they lose 1 game or 2, John? Do you remember?
I know Murray State lost 2 back in the, 2012. They went 31-2 and made the tournament before losing to Marquette.
And what seed?
And they were a 6. They were a 6 seed.
Okay.
Yeah.
My thought is that's probably more where Charleston ends up with that only one loss the rest of the way. But let's turn to final thoughts here, because I know there's another sport that we all want to get to watching, or some of us do at least. And Tytel, I got the screen share off. Let me start with you. This guy
who's not a gentleman at all, Coach Steve I don't know if it's Collar or Kohler, I don't care, frankly. He's the head coach at D3 Concordia in Chicago. Good news, his team is 8-2. Bad news, some of his players broke the team's curfew rules a week or two ago, and in response, he ran them through a brutal practice that ended up with 5 players in the hospital last week. The school temporarily removed him because of its zero tolerance policy for harassment or retaliation. They postponed the next two games to give the team time to get healthy and get out of the hospital, scheduled to host Dominican University tomorrow night. So I fully support consequences for actions. If you violate a team policy, there should be consequences, but it simply cannot involve putting the health and safety of your players at risk.
No, it can't. And this is why this is not one of the Chicago schools we are fans of, unlike East-West University.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. Let me pull that down here. And Salika, you have any final thoughts?
I feel like Penn State has been playing through a lot of empty crowds for the first 2 months of the regular season. So what they've done recently is they've mixed in an annual trip to the Palestra, and that turned out to be the case for when they were playing Purdue. So Penn State gets out to a decent lead at halftime before Purdue makes the comeback right here. So I feel like they're getting their largest crowds, but unfortunately you've got to travel about 150 miles down the Northeast Extension in the Blue Route to get to the Palestra, as opposed to your own spacious arena on campus.
True. Dorman.
This is the meat of the conference season for the teams that are sitting on the bubble or below the cut line. It's ready. It's time to go. You need to get your resume in order, and it better be quick, and it better be now, or you're going to be in trouble come March, and you'll be on the cut line, or you'll need to win the conference tournament. So these next 4 to 6 weeks are so important. There's great basketball coming, incredible conference play. Really excited. Here we go. 2023 is here, and down the stretch we go.
I think we did a great job timing the show to right at 8 when the college football game was, to my information, was going to kicked off 15 minutes early for some stupid reason. So, Greg, why don't you finish the show so we can go watch this game?
Real quick, yeah, because I know we all want to move on to watch East-West versus Chicago State. My final thought is the Mountain West, because I think that there's a lot of teams in there with bloated records, but they didn't get a lot of the out-of-conference wins that the teams from the Big 12, the Pac-12, and it's because they're not getting those opportunities. Now, are they passing on those opportunities? Are they not seeking them out? Are they not in as many exempt events or made for TV events? I don't know. And if they're not, I really don't know why, because New Mexico, why? I mean, these are programs with really rich fan bases and in that good ratings. I guess I'm just kind of inquisitive, but like San Diego State was out in the Maui, but other than that, they weren't in the bigger exempt events like everybody, like teams from all the other conferences we talked about tonight.
Well, I do think it's interesting because you see some very high nets in the Mountain West, which means that they did find a way to schedule well. Teams like, yeah, Utah State with that top 30 net and I think a garbage profile right now, for example.
Yeah, so,
but I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back again at our normal time, I guess Wednesday night under the radar, Thursday night bracket rundown. Next week, another Hoops HD report. But on behalf of John Tytel, David Griggs, John Salika, David Dorman, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.